Welcome to the Garbage Pod. One pod, one load of garbage.
29 and 28.
Remanded in custody.
There's something curious about this broadcast.
Hello everybody and welcome to episode 22 of the Garbage Pod. Before we carry on with the show, I have an apology to make. During the fantastic time we spent with Gareth Jones on episode 21, I stated that the Roald Dahl Museum was in Prince of Risborough, when of course it's in the lovely village of Great Missenden. So apologies to the people of Great Missenden and the Roald Dahl Museum. Links to both are on the blog. I think I'm being joined by somebody in cyberspace.
Hello, Mark. Fancy meeting you here. Do you come here often?
It's Mr. Mallows. How are you doing, sir?
Yeah, very good. Thank you very much, young man. How about yourself?
Yeah, hectic time. With May coming along, it's a lot of things going on in the Garden City and surrounding areas. So watch this space, basically.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, well, hopefully I'll look to get involved in some of those with you, if I may.
Yeah, certainly. We'll try and get some other people on board as well, and it should be a blast.
Excellent. Well, I look forward to it.
I thought we would start the show by talking about a huge event that takes place around this time every year since 1956.
May Bank Holiday.
It's that time of year again when the UK find out how much the rest of Europe don't like them.
I was going to come up with a very unpolitically correct statement then, but I had to bite my tongue. I'm assuming we're talking about Eurovision, sir.
Yes, it's the Eurovision Song Contest later this month in Malmo in Sweden. I've waded through all 39 entries, so you don't have to, and then selected tracks that I think could be contenders.
We think there may be some contenders, or is it just not which one sucks the least?
There are some fairly good ones out there, actually, this year. Let's start off with the good old United Kingdom. This year, the UK is represented by Bonnie Tyler, perhaps best known for her classic Jim Steinman songs, Total Eclipse of the Heart and Holding Out for a Hero. Bonnie Tyler has a brand new album called Rocks and Honey, and her Eurovision entry, Believe in Me, comes from that.
Well, I'm glad you said it was Bonnie Tyler, because for a little while there, I wasn't sure if it was Joe McElderry.
I think it's kind of got a country kind of Taylor Swift-y kind of thing going on about it.
But I don't see that doing very well, because it's from the UK, and the Eurovision recently tends to like things a bit more upbeat, so why we've gone for another ballad, I'm not really quite sure.
Yeah, I can see what you're saying there. Believe in Me was composed by songwriter and producer Desmond Child, one of the music business most successful creative forces, with 70 top 40 singles and sold over 300 million albums worldwide. He's worked with a diverse collection of artists, from Bon Jovi and Aerosmith to Ricky Martin and Kelly Clarkson. So, in theory, that should be a force to be reckoned with. However, our track record begs to differ.
If we really want to win it, we wheel out One Direction. Even though on the verge of splitting up, did I hear? Or they actually split up?
That might have been JLS.
JLS definitely has split up, yeah. But I was hearing rumours about One Direction as well. But
yeah, well, when they first came out, I thought One Direction, there was only One Direction down the job centre. But
well, no, see, that's the thing. They kind of hit the market at the right time, didn't they? Kind of, I say, in the need for another boy band, and I suppose pop music almost was, really, because there wasn't many fresh, new, young boy bands around, so they kind of hit the ground running, really, didn't they?
Yeah, I guess. right place, right time. Sometimes it does help.
Yeah, Simon Cowell also helps, because the man, much so a lot of people hate him, you have to say he is a genius. He knows how to make money, and he knows how to make money from music.
This is true. This is very true. Right, shall we go on to the next country?
Yeah, let's.
Next up is Austria. Now that was Natalia Kelly with Shine. I actually quite like this. Now I think she sounds a little bit like Scottish singer-songwriter Katie Tunstall.
Right, okay, yeah, I can see where you'd get that from.
But yeah, it's not a bad song.
She does have a good voice, but again, it's not a reason to watch Eurovision. I do like my up-tempo music, and as I say, it does seem to work in Eurovision these days.
I think it's different to your usual kind of Eurovision entry, and I just hope they go for something fresh rather than something predictable.
Yeah, well, it's from Austria, so you know it'll probably get votes from Germany and possibly Hungary and stuff like
and
that.
Switzerland, yeah.
Yeah, we did it a couple of years ago. There's a group of us watching Eurovision, and I can't remember if I've mentioned this before or not. One of my friends, his girlfriend, she was literally pretty much hitting the nail on the head with which countries would give 12 points to which which acts based
you can see it. I mean,
how they are and politically and all that sort of stuff.
I mean, you can guarantee Greece will give 12 points to Cyprus, and Cyprus will give 12 points to Greece, and they'll give absolutely nothing to Turkey.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff.
Kind of crazy, really.
Next up is Belgium. So that was Roberto Bellarossa with Love Kills. Roberto's family are more associated with professional sports than music, but at the age of 9, realising that Roberto would never become a sporting hero, his parents enrolled him in a music academy to study the rudiments of music theory. In 2010, Roberto became the first person to win Belgium's version of The Voice, and the rest is history, so they say. I think Roberto's voice sounds a little bit like Enrique Iglesias.
I'm going to be coming off as a real sourpuss here, but it doesn't really do it for me.
It's more upbeat than the previous two.
Oh, granted, yeah, it's definitely more upbeat. So I was just having a quick look, actually, while I was listening to that, at like the past sort of 10, 12 winners of Eurovision, and it's kind of Scandinavia and Eastern Europe.
What they've got now is semi-finals and a final. Now, they split the more Baltic state countries. In certain parts of the semi-finals, they cannot vote for people in certain regions. Otherwise, it would be solely Baltic states that would go into the final.
Oh, right, I see what you mean, because they'd all vote
for each other.
People from their region, yeah.
The fortunate thing about that is the UK will always be in the final, because the five original Eurovision states always go through to the final on default. They don't have to go through the semis, they go straight through to the finals.
And who are the other four then, if England, sorry, United Kingdom are...
Now you're asking. I think it's Spain, France... And, oh, Switzerland
is one, apparently, because they won the first one.
And it's always the host nation who gets through to the final as well. So that'll be Sweden.
Yeah, it'd be a bit silly not to have the host nation in the final, wouldn't it?
It'd be a bit stupid.
Yeah.
Let's go on with the next country, which is Finland.
Yeah, I do it for you.
So that's Krista Siegfrieds with Marry Me. Krista Siegfrieds was selected to represent Finland due to her energetic performances on The Voice of Finland. I think she's got a very Katy Perry feel about her.
Yeah, without doubt. And if it doesn't win, I think it's going to do very well. Going back to answer Krista Siegfrieds' question, if I'll marry her, the answer is most definitely yes.
Yeah, she is very good looking. But then she's from Scandinavia, and Scandinavian women are renowned for being quite good looking.
Yeah, so I'm definitely predicting her as a winner.
So let's go on to the next entry, which is France. Tu m'as mis KO d'entrée. Il faut croire que j'ai bien aimé. Lien de cuir et main de soie. Qui blesse, tu es dans quel port? Comme un sort, je vais te faire. So that was Amandine Bourgeois with Le Frère et Moi. In 2008, Amandine won La Nouvelle Star, or French Pop Idol. In 2009, her debut album, 20 Meters Squared, won a gold disc. And in 2012, she released her second album, Son et Moi, Mon et Moi, which she recorded in the famous Abbey Road Studios in London. And the album was produced with the production teams behind Amy Winehouse and Plan B.
Oh, fantastic.
This song, L'Enfer et Moi, was written by Boris Bergman, who is well known by fans of Eurovision Song Contest because he has written previous entries for Monaco. I really like Amandine. She has a very French kind of Amy Winehouse sound.
I could get used to that. Obviously need to go back to my basics and try and understand what she's singing about.
Actually, if you go on to the, I'm not too sure if it's the Eurovision site or the BBC's Eurovision site, it's actually got a translation, so you can have a look at that.
Yeah, I will be sure to check that out.
Okay, let's go on to the next country, which is Germany.
Germany stolen steps.
That was Cascada. Cascada are made up of singer Natalie Horler and her team of producers and writers, Janu and Mannion, and their track Evacuate the Dance Floor made top 10 worldwide and reached number one in the official UK charts in 2009.
Yeah, I do like Cascada, to be honest, so that would be a good one to watch out for as well.
It's got a very strong Eurovision feel to it, which is probably why you said it, the steps comment.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it did sound like that until obviously I knew who it was. Then yeah, it makes sense. But it did sound very stepsy.
Next up, we have Ireland. We're gonna live like it's the last night alive. And we're dancing to the morning light. And even if the sun don't rise, in the end only love survives. So be loved, be loved. So that was Ryan Dolan with Only Love Survives. Ireland's history in the competition is incredibly rich because they have won Eurovision 7 times. Ryan Dolan is a young singer-songwriter from Strabane in Tyrone. His distinctive vocals have provided support to many acts over the years, including Tinchy Strider. Dolan has been touted as one of the most exciting homegrown musical talents to be discovered in Ireland in recent years, and his YouTube channel has received over 800,000 hits.
And more importantly, he beat Jedward.
I don't even know if they were up for the running, to be honest, because they said they were going to keep going and going and going until they won it. So I'm gathering they got outvoted.
Yeah, let's hope so.
So what did you think of that one?
Loving it. As we, you can tell the countries that are used to winning Eurovision, as I said before at the start, it is all about having something kind of upbeat and something that people will enjoy rather than something that makes people think too much or too slow, lovey, ballady.
Yeah, I can see what you're saying there. I also think this is going to be a bit more for eye candy for the girlies as well. I'd say he might get a few votes. He's got a kind of a... I don't want to insult the man by saying he's got a bit of a Bieber thing going, but...
Yeah, you can't say that about a man. That's like the lowest of the low right there, brother. I apologise, Ryan, that he's even come out with that comment, because that's disgraceful.
Next up is Montenegro. So that was Who See with Ingranka. They are really on point with what's about at the moment, giving it that kind of dubstep feel to it. Who See are Debda and Noise, a Montenegrin hip-hop act famous in their home country for their humorous music videos. Actually, when you go onto the BBC Eurovision site, it actually asks you whether you're over 18 to watch the video.
It sounded a lot like Louder, though, by DJ Fresh featuring Sean Evans.
Yeah, I can see where you're coming from with that. For this Eurovision entry, the duo have teamed up with a singer called Nina, I'm going to get this wrong, Zizek here, who has established a solo career in the Montenegrin dance music scene. So they're pretty heavy into the dance music side of things. And... The group Who See have made history to be the first Montenegro group ever to be nominated for an MTV Music Award, MTV Europe Music Award.
Really?
Yeah, so that's quite an achievement, really.
Yeah, without doubt.
Next we have Norway. Against my back, and you dare me to face the attack. You say for cowards, there's no reward. Feel the heat. Oh, take my hand. I trust your way. Bring the fire. I don't care if it hurts. I have the future on my tongue. Give me a kiss. Now I can see the whole world is my hand. I can't touch and feel. So I feed you my love. So that was Margaret's Burger with I Feed You My Love. Currently recording her third album in London, Norwegian singer-songwriter Margaret Berger has signed to Sony BMG after becoming second in Norwegian's version of Pop Idol. In 2008, she became the musical director of NRK-P3, which is one of the three national radio stations in the Norwegian Broadcasting Corporation. And she has enjoyed a diverse career as a DJ, a fashion model, and in music ever since. The producers of I Feed You My Love, Robin Lynch and Nicholas Oliverson, are dance music heavyweights whose previous producer credits include Pink, Justin Timberlake and Keith Urban.
Oh, right. It had a very 80s feel to it, I thought.
I quite like it. I think it's got a kind of what's the name of the band? Evanescence kind of feel,
really?
To it. Yeah, kind of.
I wasn't feeling an Evanescence vibe.
The more harmonic part of it before it goes into more metal. It's kind of got that bit to it, I think. But that's just me.
Agree to disagree.
Okay, finally, we have Slovenia. We found the place where we belong. Out of the dark, a flame is strong. We're moving fast, we won't look back. Higher and higher we go. Straight into love. Straight into love. Straight into love. Let the world drop from the sky into the night. So that was Hannah. We're straight into love. Now, Slovenia have pulled a kind of a Celine Dion with this one, because in 1988, France had Celine Dion as their Eurovision entry, even though she's Canadian, although she's French-Canadian. But Hannah Mancini is actually American, and she relocated to Slovenia after marrying a Slovenian guy. Before settling in Slovenia, Hannah sung on vocals for numerous Disney soundtracks and has supported both Seal and Sheryl Crow with her band Hot Chili. Hannah has had previous brush with Eurovision fame, taking part in the national finals in 2011. Despite becoming runner-up in the nationals, Hannah's song, You're the One, became a big hit in Europe.
I can see why. That's from just that little soundbite there. That's got another big contender written all over it for me.
Yeah, I think so too. The rest of the lineup are either very, how can I put it, local. It's the best way of putting it.
Yeah, it's a local song for local people.
It doesn't translate well overseas, I think, yeah. Is the best way of putting it. Either that or they're very 80s-styly ballads and so dry. The Eurovision semi-finals take place on the 14th and 16th of May, and the finals take place on the 18th of May. So to all participating in Malmo, good luck, and let's hope nobody gets nil point.
Absolutely. Good luck to everyone.
This is the BBC Home Service. Here is the news.
Right, I'd like to start off with a couple of space-related news stories that have taken place over the last fortnight, if I may.
Absolutely.
Okay, firstly, on the 21st of April, Orbital Sciences Corporation completed a successful test launch of its Antares rocket from the Mid-Atlantic Regional Spaceport, or MARS, located at NASA Wallops Flight Facility in Eastern Virginia. Liftoff took place at 5 p.m. local time, followed by a payload separation approximately 10 minutes later and the mission completion at about 18 minutes after launch. The test launch, dubbed Antares A1 mission, was conducted under the Commercial Orbital Transportation Services contract that Orbital entered into with NASA in 2008. Following a successful demonstration mission to the International Space Station, which Orbital hopes to complete in mid-2013. Orbital can begin regular cargo delivery missions to the space station under the contract with NASA. The $1.9 billion contract calls for a delivery of up to 20,000 kilograms of essential supplies to the station over eight separate missions between 2013 and 2016. In addition, the new Antares rocket will offer commercial, civil government, defence and intelligence customers affordable and reliable services for mid-class satellites that do not require the industry's larger, more expensive launch vehicles. It's been designed to launch spacecraft weighing up to 14,000 pounds into low Earth orbit, as well as lighter weight payloads into higher energy orbits. What do you make of that?
Well, yeah, great news, isn't it, really?
Well, it is, because it is kind of a competitor of SpaceX. And also, the more of these commercial clients they're going to be out there, the cheaper getting stuff into space will be.
Yeah, that's true. The more competition there is, yeah, to provide something, the cheaper it gets, unless it's petrol.
Now, I think this test launch has started a competition with SpaceX, not for business, but for the use of the word nominal.
Okay.
You see, ever since the first SpaceX launch, nominal has been used frequently to emphasise the parts of the missions that are going well. This has started a craze amongst the space community called the nominal drinking game, which is played by taking a shot of your favourite tipple every time the word nominal is mentioned during a space launch. The SpaceX record for nominal usage is 31. This is the Antares test launch. Just have a listen to this.
Nominal. All systems remain nominal as nominal. Nominal. And Terry's performance is nominal. Nominal. And Terry has delivered the A1 test mission payload into orbit.
So, if you lost count there, that was 93 times in 18 minutes. So, if you were playing the nominal drinking game during that launch, you would have been absolutely hammered.
I'm not going to lie, that got really annoying.
And it'll be interesting to see now if SpaceX try to out-nominal Orbital Sciences during their next launch. If so, we have a different kind of space race on our hands.
I think I might speak on behalf of some of the listeners, but can we ban that word from the show?
You can actually get T-shirts with it on.
Wowzers. Yeah, that's not good. That's worse than the Roxanne drinking game.
Also, on the 29th of April, Virgin Galactic broke the speed of sound in the first rocket-powered flight of Spaceship Two. The test officially marks the final phase of the vehicle testing before they can begin commercial service from Spaceport America in New Mexico. The test began at 7:02 a.m. local time when Spaceship Two took off from Mojave Air and Spaceport, mated to White Knight 2, Virgin Galactic's carrier aircraft. On board Spaceship 2 were pilot Mark Stuckey and co-pilot Mike Olsbury, who are the test pilot for Scaled Composites, who built Spaceship 2 for Virgin Galactic. At the White Knight 2 controls were Virgin Galactic's chief pilot Dave Mackey, assisted by co-pilot Clint Nichols and flight test engineer Brian Maisler. Upon reaching 47,000 feet, and approximately 45 minutes into the flight, Spaceship 2 was released from White Knight 2. The pilots then triggered the ignition of the rocket's motor and at this point, Spaceship 2 propelled forward and upwards to a maximum of 55,000 feet. The entire engine burn lasted only 16 seconds, and during this time, Spaceship 2 went supersonic, achieving Mach 1.2.
You say 16 seconds, that engine burst, and it managed to reach speeds of over Mach 1.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Did you say it was quite, was the altitude of it before they had the engine burst? Would it obviously would have been quite high, so isn't it not easier to accelerate when you get to a certain height?
Yeah, that's why they went to 47,000 feet. Normal passengers are not going to be able to deal with the G-force being launched from ground into the air. So they'll take White Knight 2, which is the plane that it's attached to, will take them to 47,000 feet, then it will drop them slightly, the engines will cut in and take them to the edge of space.
And how do they get back down?
It'll fly down as like a plane, like the shuttle used to.
Right, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it's going to be something else when it actually gets going. Here is what Richard Branson had to say after the flight.
8.5 years ago when we embarked on this programme, I would never have thought that it was going to take us 8.5 years to reach this milestone. And I think it just proves just how difficult rocket science really is. It is strange to think that only 500 people have been to space. And our dream is to ultimately enable many kids who are watching this programme to be able to go into space. And I think we can make that dream become reality. And now we'll be ramping up the building of spaceships. We'll be ramping up the building of motherships. We'll be ramping up the building of rockets. It's going to be the start of a, you know, whole new era of space travel. It's going to be tremendously exciting. Everything's possible, I think, after today.
I think he's right. Not just for Virgin Galactic. When other people see things working, it inspires them to do things themselves. And that's what we want.
Yeah, absolutely. Inspiration's a great thing.
When Spaceship 2 went supersonic, Richard Branson tweeted, "Ironic. We tried to buy Concorde and now have flown the first supersonic commercial vehicle since it was retired."
Yeah, Concorde is it's sorely missed because the technology involved, bearing in mind we're talking, it was the wasn't it early 70s, wasn't it, that the Concorde first flew?
Yeah, 71 72, something like that, bearing in mind that it was, you know, designed in the 60s. So,
well, that's it. And some of the technology they used on Concorde, it was just so far in advance of the time it was produced. It's unbelievable.
Well, you've got to say the same about the space shuttle, really, because, yes, its first launch as a rocket was in 1981, but it actually flew in 78, I think it actually flew like a plane, and it was designed in the early 60s.
So, yes, it's a great time for that sort of engineering, and then they use a lot of the stuff they used on the original Concorde is used on commercial flights now, isn't it? It's pretty much standard.
Yeah, yeah.
Crichton, what are you doing, man?
Oh, sir, I'm listening to the Garbage Pod. It's a podcast I found in the podosphere.
Right, shall we go on to normal news stories now?
Yeah, I've actually got, if I may be so bold as to dive in with one I've actually been able to find that was on the Telegraph website at the back end of last week. It's quite a humorous one, really. And it is that council road painters failed to spot missing school. Workmen painted yellow zigzags on the road outside a school in Chester, failing to spot that the school was bulldozed 4 years ago.
Oh,
and there's a lovely picture of an empty field with the school road sign painted in it.
Don't you just love the councils?
That's phenomenal. I don't know how you would make that mistake. Surely you'd have thought as well that, granted, as a workman, you get given your instructions, like, this is what you need to do. You get there, you realise there's no school, it's all, you know, railed off and everything. Wouldn't you think to put in a quick call to the boss and be like, do we really need to do this?
I mean, I can remember a time, my cousin, he was parked up in a side road in London that he had to walk a little bit of a distance to go and buy his season ticket for Arsenal. And while he was away, there was no signs anywhere saying, can you not park your car in this street because we're going to do some line painting? But they were actually waiting for him at the end of the road till he got back. when he got back to his car, he noticed that there was yellow lines everywhere apart from where his car was. So there was a big hole, and they were waiting for him to disappear so that they could just come along and put the line back in.
That's top draw.
He's actually,
I bet he was their favourite person at the time.
He actually stood there and took a photograph of it.
Oh, well, yeah, they'd have loved him even more for that then.
Oh, crazy, funny.
Crazy workman.
What have I got here? Objections from Google have forced the removal of the word ungoogleable from the list of new Swedish words that the Language Council of Sweden have put in their kind of like their dictionary. The language watchdog defines ungoogleable or googlebar in Swedish as something that cannot be found in any search engine. But Google wanted the meaning to relate to only Google searches, according to the council. Google responded by saying that it was protecting its trademark.
Wow.
So they've actually had to take it out just in case they get sued.
Over the use of the word Googled or ungooglable.
If something is ungooglable, that means Google are not doing their job properly.
Maybe that's why they didn't want it in there, not so much. Maybe they just kind of made up the excuse, but ultimately, if you're saying something's ungooglable, you're saying that don't even bother looking on Google, so I guess maybe that's more of a reason, isn't it?
But it's a bit over the top, though.
Just protect image, isn't it, say?
Yeah, I guess. Right, what else have you got there?
Florida man arrested wearing jail sucks t-shirt.
That's quite now, ironic.
I know, it's brilliant. Basically, one man from Florida decided to buy and wear a jail sucks t-shirt complete with an illustration of an angry inmate behind bars, and then he was arrested. Undercover agents in Florida allegedly caught Dawn Kastner, 39, selling electronic benefits transfer, or EBT, at the Smoking Gun reported. And then obviously you can check out more on it, but it's to do with the Manatee County Sheriff's Office Operation Meal Ticket 2, apparently, an undercover investigation targeting food stamp fraud. The joke eventually was on him, really.
Most definitely. Quite literally, in fact.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the joke was on him. That's that definitely made me smile when I read that, and that was another perler from. That was actually the Huffington Post that had that one on there.
Ah, yes. Now, you may have heard of this one. School dinner staff have been banned from serving triangular flapjacks after one was thrown and hurt a pupil.
I did hear about this.
Caterers at Castle View School in Canvey Island, Essex, have been told instead to cut their flapjacks into squares or rectangles. The school said it was an isolated incident and had led to the review of the texture and shape of flapjacks served to students. Essex County Council said that it did not give schools guidance on the shape of foodstuffs. Health and safety advisor Ray Hurst said, could not understand why triangular flapjacks have been banned, but not those that have been cut into squares or rectangles. Anything that is thrown is likely to cause injury if it hits someone, especially in the face or the eye. Former president of the Institution of Occupational Safety and Health said, it does seem a little over the top to ban triangular flapjacks. Now, I personally don't think it's anything to do with the shape. I think it's to do with the fact that it was overcooked.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. If it's cooked properly, it's not going to do as much damage as a rock-hard flapjack, is it?
Well, a flapjack, I mean, you drop it, if you just drop it on your plate, it crumbles.
Yeah, absolutely.
So if you throw it with a little velocity, it's just going to break up as soon as it hits your face. It's not going to cause you any damage. So it doesn't say a lot for their school dinner staff, does it, really?
No, it does not.
Unbelievable.
I've got one here. New Zealand says no to bizarre baby names, including For Real, Justice, spelled with a Z, and Lucifer.
Lucifer's cool.
Yeah, New Zealand officials have released a list of baby names put forward by parents that were rejected because they were too bizarre or offensive. And also Mafia No Fear. Surely someone would not call their baby Mafia No Fear. They've also banned Queen Victoria. Oh, and V8, apparently, was... some of them are really... And they also don't like you using something that may be as if you had an official title, so no king, no duke, no princess.
Okay. Now, I think they should ban you from giving your child the same name as you.
Oh, come on. There's nothing wrong with Bob, Bob Jr., Bob well, Senior.
Well, there is. If you're in the future trying to find your ancestry past, it's a pain in the backside when everyone's got the same blooming name.
Well, that's why you go by the date of birth. Come on. Just have to dig a little bit deeper. Plus, in theory, it makes it easier because, you know, when it's all online, you just Google or go into one of these, like, Ancestry.com, whatever. You type in, say, for example, something like Bob Mallows. It's going to bring up everyone.
Taylor is an unbelievable name to try and look up because there's billions of them. But when you have a great-great-grandfather whose first name was Gallup, it's easier to look up.
Yeah, I guess, well, hopefully if I do have kids and they have kids, etc., they'll be quite happy then that they have to look up Adrian Mallows, won't they? Or Adrian Mallows, should I say.
Definitely.
Have you got any more yourself over there, dude?
Yeah, I've got quite a few here. Emily Sandé has made chart history after spending the most consecutive weeks in the UK top 10 with a debut album. Our Version of Events, which was released in February 2012, became the biggest selling album of the year and has smashed a record held by the Beatles for nearly 50 years.
She did sing a lot at the Olympics.
Yeah, it's been a good year for her, actually. Every live event that you can think of, Emily Sandé has been there. The album has not left the top 10 since its release, totaling in 64 weeks in the album chart. The Beatles' debut, Please Please Me, previously spent 62 weeks inside the top 10 between its release in 63 and 64. Our Version of Events has sold 1.82 million copies in the UK to date, spending a total of 10 weeks at number one. It has also broken the 100,000 weekly sales barrier on three separate occasions and is currently the biggest selling album of 2013, having shifted 429,000 copies since January.
Wow.
So, yeah, it has been an absolutely amazing year for her.
So she's been everywhere. She was all over the Olympics. She's still going to be fresh in everyone's minds because of that.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic. Yeah, fair play to her. Mm-hmm. I think, didn't she, if I think of one of the songs I've got a feeling, did she do like didn't she do Amazing Grace or something like that? Abide with me.
Yeah,
that song always has, I have to admit this on live live podcast, but always gets me to tears, that song, because I always think of death. Unfortunately, it's a funeral type song, isn't it? It kind of thinking maybe it was because of Hillsborough, possibly.
Yeah.
That might be a big thing for me that kind of triggers that memory.
It's always an emotional song because it is the FA Cup's hymn. They always play Abide With Me at the FA Cup final, and to hear the whole crowd singing Abide With Me at Wembley Stadium is quite moving. It's almost like hearing You'll Never Walk Alone at Anfield.
Yeah.
That is quite moving.
Yeah, so what else do you have there, buddy?
Right, four girls in Rochelle, Georgia are fighting to do in their hometown what the Civil Rights Act was meant to do for all of America in 1964. End segregation. Listen to this news report from WSAV Georgia, which is a local news station there.
Yeah, it's kind of embarrassing.
Stephanie, Mauricia, Quanisha, and Keela say they do everything together, except prom night.
We're all friends. That's just kind of not right that we can't go to prom together.
In a world full of color, Wilcox County High School still see things as black and white.
There's a white prom, and then we have our integrated prom.
If any race other than Caucasian tries to attend the white prom,
they would probably have the police come out there and escort them off the premises.
Yes.
That was the case just last year as a biracial student was turned away by police. It's been that way for as long as anyone can remember, and it doesn't stop at prom. Homecoming is also segregated. While still having two separate dances, the school decided to elect only one pair for king and queen for the first time this school year. Quenisha won.
I feel like it had to be a change because for me to be a black person and for the king to be a white person, I felt like, you know, why can't we come together?
But nothing changed. Quenisha wasn't invited to the white homecoming. In fact, the pair took separate pictures for the school yearbook.
When people around here are set in their ways, they're not too adamant to change.
So the girls are taking matters into their own hands.
If we don't change it, no one else will. We do it Friday and Saturday.
They're organizing a prom for everyone to attend, but everyone is not fond of the idea.
We actually put up posters for the integrated prom. We had people ripping them down at the school.
The group will continue to make progress even though there doesn't seem to be much motivation to change.
We need to stick with the tradition. It's, you know, this is a traditional thing. We don't need to change and stuff like that. I'm like, but why? No one could answer my question. So.
Exactly. And they think that nothing's broken, so why fix it?
So this will be the first time that the Wilcox County High School has held an integrated prom. It's just unbelievable in this day and age that there's that kind of segregation going on.
Yeah, it's bordering on criminal, isn't it, really? You'd have thought even in the deepest southern parts of America, you would hope that they'd come a little way since back in the day of the race riots, but it seems as though they haven't moved on much, unfortunately.
What the news story didn't actually say was that the event was organised and funded by parents and students, not the school system.
Right, so we're thinking maybe the problem there is the school system rather than the community.
I think there still could be a little bit of problem within the community there, maybe. But on the whole, most of the kids are up for it, up for just the one prom instead of having the two.
That's it, because they're all friends, aren't they? That's the thing. It's not about race. It's about who your friends are.
And I think there's a phrase, and I will kind of quote Janet Jackson on this. Children are born with a spirit so innocent until we teach them how to hate.
Yeah, that's a great quote.
I don't know. There's a difference between the UK and certain parts of America. As the guy actually said there, that if you were of a different race and turned up to the standard prom night that they were having there, you would have been arrested and taken away. Now, if somebody had tried to do that in this country, the people that were instigating that would have been arrested for being racist.
Yeah.
There is the complete difference.
Oh, yeah, there's always so much of a fuss, isn't there, when the EDL, just when it goes on their protests or their marches, there's such a massive police presence to try and stop any violence occurring.
Yeah, let's not go into the EDL.
Yeah, we'll leave it there.
What I will say, though, is for anybody outside of the UK who doesn't know what the EDL are, they're called the English Defence League. Let's say that they're on par with the KKK, the Ku Klux Klan.
Well, some are and some aren't. That's the thing. It's kind of, there are some people that I know that are in it that it's not about race. It is just purely about the country. But obviously, I know that's probably more of a minority than.
Yeah, pretty much.
But yeah, as you say, let's leave it there. And,
yes.
In other news, it's just something quite comical how someone can make such a blunder. It's just a typo. It goes back to the Boston Marathon bombings. And if for anyone who's familiar with New Girl, I guess maybe they'll find this a little bit funny, that during a Fox News broadcast on Fox 4, the main actress in New Girl, Zooey Deschanel, they put her name up as one of the bombing suspects. So I've got a little picture here. It's got marathon bombing. He is 19-year-old Zooey Deschanel, and it's got a picture of one of the bombing suspects. You do wonder how they could make such a blunder.
I can easily see how they made the blunder. This is coming from the same network that, once again, a typo, said that Obama was dead when they meant Bin Laden.
Oh, wow, yeah. that's quite a typo. You have a nation up in arms, but for the wrong reasons.
Although another network, I think it was NBC, during the Olympics, put down the description of Australia as a country that is bordered by Germany and Switzerland.
Was it not also NBC that missed the 100-metre final because they went to adverts?
Yes, it was. You can guarantee if there's going to be some kind of foul-up somewhere along the line, Fox is usually involved.
You're listening to The Garbage Pod.
I like finding stories that bring smiles to my face, and the headline on this one does just that. Life jacket saves a fish called Einstein who can't swim. A goldfish who lost his ability to swim no longer has that sinking feeling after his owner made him a life jacket.
A life jacket for a goldfish.
Made out of like a straw. It looks like they've put it together with like Kinex pieces. It's really weird. But it obviously works. So yeah, apparently he looked doomed when he developed a disease which made him turn upside down and sink to the bottom of his tank. When he couldn't get back up, it was a sorry sight, said owner Leighton Naylor. It broke my heart to see him so helpless. He looked so depressed. So Mr. Naylor used recycled tubing to make Einstein a buoyancy aid that lets him swim around the tank without floundering at the bottom.
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Where did you say this was? Does it say? Is it in the UK or...?
Warehouse worker Mr. Naylor, 32, of Blackpool.
Blimey.
He said he wriggled a bit at first and he wasn't too keen on the idea. He kept catching onto plants and getting stuck. But since I've rearranged the tank to make it disability friendly, he has been fine.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of a friend of ours, Dave. Good old Dave. I always remember when he was trying to breed pufferfish.
He tried to breed pufferfish?
Yeah, very difficult to breed. And he was trying to clean the tank out. Obviously, to clean a tank out, you have to empty so much of the water out and things like that. Put the tube in the water to try and siphon it into a bucket. And the pufferfish got a bit, say, curious and went to the edge of the hose and went up the hose. And pufferfishes tend, when they panic, to puff up. And it puffed up inside the tube.
And got stuck.
So Dave had to get a craft knife out and very carefully cut the tube to try and get the puffer fish out.
Wow. Did he manage to get it out?
Yeah, he did it without hurting the fish.
No fish were harmed in the making of this film.
Quite amazing.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
What does this sound mean to you?
Mind the gap.
Well, it reminds me, obviously, of the London Underground, and it actually... reminds me of a funny incident my family had on the tube. We were, which is when I was younger, probably about, I must have been about 10 or something like that. We're all on the tube. We might have been going down to Weymouth or something. And I just remember that coming on. And you heard the mind the gap. And you know how it always used to be, like the guy in the office at the end of the platform or something like that?
Yeah.
He must have been really close because I remember my dad shouting out, "How about a please?" And the next thing you hear is, "Mind the gap, please. Please mind the gap." Brilliant.
Well, the 44-year-old Mind the Gap recording, once heard across the Tube network, is returning to one station so that the widow of the actor behind the voice can hear it. Dr. McCollum said she used to frequently travel via the embankment and loved hearing her husband's voice, even when he was alive. Since he died, I would sit there and wait for the next train until I heard his voice. And on November the 1st, 2012, he wasn't there. I was just stunned when Oswald wasn't there anymore. I inquired and was told that the new digital system that they had installed wasn't able to have his recording put on it. But after hearing what the voice meant to Dr. McCollum, Transport for London arranged for a CD of the recording for her, which she says she listens to quite frequently. London Underground director Nigel Holness said Transport for London were approached by the widow of Oswald Lawrence to see whether she could get a copy of the iconic Mind the Gap announcement that her husband made back in 1969. We were very touched by her story, so the staff tracked down the recording, and not only were they able to get a copy of the announcement on CD for her, they were able to keep the original recording working at the embankment station so that she could hear it when she was travelling through.
That's a really good story.
Yeah, you don't get a lot of that kind of thing going on these days, do you?
No, it just goes to show you that... that there is still people out there that will look out for other humans, shall we say.
Yeah, it's quite a touching story, really.
Yeah, very much so.
You got anything else for us, Adrie?
Yeah, one last one, and I'm afraid it comes back to our faithful friends at the council. just something I found. the headline's brilliant. Big squeeze on parking. Inept road workers painted two sets of double yellow lines along a 4-foot wide alley that is too narrow to drive down.
I think I saw that on the news. Yeah, that, oh.
It's brilliant. So residents were baffled to discover the lines, part of a clampdown on illegal parking in Swindon, Wiltshire.
Talk about Jobsworths.
That's just, again, quick call to the boss. Boss, this is an alley. No one's going to be parking up here.
It kind of reminds me of my mum and dad's house when it used to belong to the council. And a big crack developed in the wall, and mum was worried about it falling on me if ever I was there. Mum and dad's house, there's a kind of a green bit between her house and the next door neighbours, and there's a wall there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that wall is the one I'm talking about. Mum complained to the council about it, and they said, well, there's no harm in that falling on anybody because it's only 2 foot high. Mum said, well, unless the bricks have actually grown in the soil, you come and have a look at it because it's over 6 foot tall.
Brilliant. That's just phenomenal.
The voice of Alexander Graham Bell has been identified for the first time in a recording from 1885. On the wax disc recording, the telephone inventor says, "Hear my voice, Alexander Graham Bell." The recording is amongst the earliest held by the Smithsonian Institution, which runs the National Museum of American History. Bell's voice was recorded on the disc on the 15th of April 1885 at his voice laboratory in Washington. As well as saying his name, he also recites a series of numbers and lines from various Shakespeare plays, identifying the voice of Alexander Bell, the man who brought us everyone else's voice, is a major moment in the study of history, said the museum director John Gray. It enriches what we know about the late 1800s, who spoke, what they said, and how they said it. The disc was too fragile to play using a needle, so the museum, along with researchers at the US Library of Congress and the Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory, developed an alternative playback system that used light and a 3D camera to turn the bumps and grooves into sounds. Do you want to listen to a little bit of the disc?
Yeah, let's do it.
It's not very clear, but here we go.
You are my heart, Alexander Graham Bell.
So you can hear him say there, hear my voice, Alexander Graham Bell. I'll also include a link so you can hear the whole disc. It goes on for about 4.5 minutes in the show notes. So, yeah, look out for that.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, here's the last one. Train passengers were held up for more than an hour when a railway signalman became trapped in an outside toilet. The signalman nipped away from his post to answer the call of nature, but was left flush with embarrassment when the brick outhouse lock jammed and he was stuck inside. The driver of the Hereford to London service heard the helpless cries from his co-worker, and he forced the train to stop because he could not make radio contact with the signal box. Colleagues eventually managed to set the signalman free by forcing the door open with a crowbar. The 3:13 service was delayed during the rescue near Worcester Foregate Station. Rail bosses gave the reason as signalling problems, but rail enthusiasts became privy to the truth through an internet forum. One user joked, "Where were all the relief staff when you need them?" Which, wow. Somebody else added, "Too busy filling in the signalman's lock." Network Rail apologised for Wednesday's incident and blamed the rail system's ageing buildings. The spokesman added, "Much of the railway network is still controlled by Victorian signal boxes, which often have outside loos. Our plans to modernise will see the control move to state-of-the-art regional control centres, where unfortunate incidents such as this will not be an issue." Well, that's about all we have time for on this episode of the Garbage Pod. As always, it's been a blast having the Bullhawk on board.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me, sir. It's always a pleasure, and hope everyone out there is still enjoying the Garbage Pod. It's a great home for me to work on. Really appreciate the time.
Visit www.thegarbagepod.weebly.com for the show notes for this or any other episode of the Garbage Pod or TGP Extra. Just look for the Garbage Pod show section in the menu. While you're on the website, why not have a nose about? You can find a little bit more about me and the rest of the crew and find out what's going on in the podosphere by reading the blog and much, much more. Let us know what you think of the show.
Send an email to garbagepod@virginmedia.com.
Because
your input is our output.
Or you can use the social media icons at the top of the website, which include Twitter and Facebook. If you would like to subscribe to the show, you could do so via iTunes, the RSS feed, and now via YouTube. If you look on the right-hand side of the show's page, the blog, or even the video vault, you'll see a little button there that says Donate. If you like what we do and you feel that you could give us a little something just to help us out a bit, we'd be most appreciative. And don't forget, spread the word.
Well, that just leaves us to say,
it's good night from me.
And it's good night from him.
Thanks for listening, and I'll speak to you again soon. Take care.
The Garbage Pod is a Spamhead production.
All systems remain nominal.